December 10th, 1971, Middlebury, Vermont. 18-year-old Lynn Schulze is preparing to take one of her final exams at Middlebury College. While walking to the exam with her friends, Lynn remembers that she has forgotten her pen and returns to her dorm room to retrieve it. Lynn never shows up for the exam and vanishes without a trace. The case is forgotten about for over 40 years until an unlikely connection is made between Lynn's disappearance and one of the most sensational crime stories of the modern era. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to The Trail Went Cold. I am your host, Robin Warder, and today I will be presenting our podcast's second mini-sode. As you may or may not know, The Trail Went Cold has officially become a weekly podcast, and we are now alternating between our regular feature-length episodes and 10 to 15-minute mini-sodes. These are reserved for cold cases which don't have the material for our standard 30 to 40-minute episode, but have enough interesting details to discuss in a shorter mini-sode. We feel this is a good way to deliver weekly content to our listeners and provide exposure for more cold cases. Today I'm going to be discussing a strange unsolved cold case which is nearly 45 years old and was very cold for a long time until it recently made headlines again for an unexpected reason. I've previously featured this case in an article I wrote for listfirst.com titled 10 Creepy Unsolved Mysteries from College Campuses, which was originally published in June 2013. But before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it and give us a rating or review at any of those sites. The Trail Went Cold now has its own PayPal account and a new donate button on the website for anyone who's feeling generous. If there's anybody out there who feels like making a donation, we would be incredibly flattered and greatly appreciate it. So with that out of the way, let's get started on our latest mini-sode. Our story begins in Middlebury, Vermont in 1971. Our central figure is an 18-year-old student named Lynn Schulze, who originally hails from Simsbury, Connecticut, and is attending her freshman year at Middlebury College. On December 10th, final exams for the first semester have officially begun. At 1 o'clock that day, Lynn has an exam scheduled for her English drama class. At approximately 12:55, Lynn left her dorm room and was headed to the exam with her friends. However, Lynn suddenly realized that she had forgotten her favorite pen and told her friends she was returning to her dorm room to go get it. And believe it or not, this would be the last time Lynn's friends ever saw her. She never showed up for the exam and just disappeared without explanation. It's believed that Lynn had about $30 on her at the time, but her identification, checkbook, and all the rest of her personal belongings were left behind in her room. The whole situation seemed pretty baffling because Lynn had perfect attendance for her English drama class up to that point, and had studied very hard for this exam. Unfortunately, after she was reported missing 2 days later, investigators didn't have much to work with. Apparently, Lynn had once spoken to her friends about the possibility of faking her own death and starting a new life, but they just assumed she was joking. It's true that Lynn was feeling homesick throughout the semester and had gone through phases where she considered withdrawing from school, but she had registered for some upcoming spring semester classes. And besides, dropping out of school and disappearing altogether are two entirely different things. It seemed very unlikely that Lynn would just take off with only $30 in her pocket. Up until the last year and a half, virtually the only information you could find about Lynn Schulze online was her profile page at the missing persons website, The Charlie Project. This case seemed destined to sink into obscurity forever, as there had been zero new developments in the past 4 decades. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But then, you probably recognize this music.
Sundown on a sorry day.
This is our composer, Vince Nitro, doing his own cover of the song Fresh Blood by the band Eels, which is now best known for being the opening theme of the acclaimed HBO documentary series The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already familiar with The Jinx and Robert Durst, but in case you're not, here's a quick refresher. Robert Durst is a very eccentric millionaire who hails from one of the wealthiest real estate families in New York and was often seen as the poster child for someone who gets away with everything because he's rich. On January 31st, 1982, Robert's wife, Kathleen McCormack Durst, vanished without a trace. Since the marriage was in serious trouble at that time and Robert was known for being abusive, he became the prime suspect in Kathleen's disappearance. But to this day, her body has never been found. In December 2000, Durst became the prime suspect in the murder of one of his friends, Susan Berman, who was shot to death in her Los Angeles home. 9 months later, Durst's story got even crazier when he was charged with the murder of Morris Black, an elderly neighbor of his in Galveston, Texas. Amazingly, even though Durst dismembered Black's body, his lawyers pleaded self-defense and the jury actually acquitted him of murder. So Durst went on living life as a free man again until he eventually got in touch with Andrew Jarecki, the director of a movie called All Good Things. The film starred Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst and was essentially a fictionalized story based on Robert Durst and the unsolved disappearance of his wife. Durst actually agreed to participate in a multi-part documentary series Jarecki was making about his life, and the end result was The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst, which debuted on HBO in February of 2015. However, during the filming of this documentary, Jarecki came across evidence which seemed to implicate Durst in Susan Berman's murder, and eventually turned it over to the authorities. On March 14th, the day before the finale of The Jinx aired, Durst was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. He has yet to go on trial for Susan Berman's murder, but he has pled guilty to a federal weapons charge, so at the very least, he will remain incarcerated for the next few years. So what does this have to do with Lynn Schulze's disappearance? Well, shortly after Durst's arrest, authorities announced an unlikely connection between the two cases. In 1971, Robert and Kathleen Durst lived in Vermont and owned a health food store in Middlebury called All Good Things, which is where Andrew Jarecki's film got its title from. Well, on December 10th, the very day she disappeared, Lynn Schulze purchased some dried prunes from the All Good Things store. In fact, at 12:30 p.m., just a half hour before her exam, Lynn was seen eating these prunes at a bus stop across the street from the store. Apparently, she was heard saying that she was planning to board a bus to New York, but the bus had already left. Well, here's the really strange part. Lynn was also allegedly seen at the same bus stop again at 2:15, which is over an hour after she was last seen by her friends on campus. So officially, this is the last known sighting of Lynn Schulze. The Middlebury police had actually received a tip about these sightings back in 2012, but did not reveal this information publicly until after Robert Durst was arrested. So of course, given the sensational nature of the Durst case, Lynn Schulze's disappearance wound up getting more media coverage than it ever had before. As far as I know, Durst's attorneys have never allowed him to be questioned about this case because other than the alleged sightings of Lynn outside his store, there is no evidence tying them together. But before I talk about the possible Durst connection, I have to discuss the sighting of Lynn Schulze at the bus stop at 2:15 that day, because that's when she theoretically should have been taking her exam. Of course, we know that eyewitness sightings can often be mistaken, but it's possible that someone did see her there, but just got the time frame wrong. But let's assume this sighting is accurate. This would indicate that Lynn never intended to take her exam, and that returning to her dorm room to retrieve her favorite pen was nothing more than an excuse to split off from her friends. Sure, Lynn had apparently been studying very hard for this particular exam, but maybe she just reached the point where she decided this particular college wasn't for her and decided to blow the exam off. Her statement that she was planning to board a bus to New York is pretty strange, since her family was in Connecticut, and she had no reason to go to New York. But what if she secretly met someone and was planning to meet them or travel with them to New York? Maybe she really did intend to board a bus sometime around 12:30 that day, but when she missed it, she had to return to that stop at 2:15 in order to board another bus. And that's when something bad happened to her, and she became a victim of foul play. Of course, the big hole in the bus theory is that Lynn left her ID and most of her personal items behind in her room, and it seems doubtful she wouldn't take those with her if she was planning a trip to New York. So when you consider that the tip about this didn't come in until 40 years after the fact, I can't be 100% certain the 2:15 sighting of her is correct. So I suppose the big question here is if it's possible that Lynn Schulze crossed paths with Robert Durst that day. Even though Durst was living in Vermont in 1971, he originally hailed from New York, which is where he has lived for the majority of his life. Since this was Lynn's first year at college and she was feeling homesick, what if she tried to adjust by befriending an older local man like Robert Durst, who would have been 28 years old at that time? Since Durst was from New York, maybe he convinced Lynn to take a trip there with him on December 10th, but used this opportunistic moment to harm and kill her. Lynn Schulze is actually not the only unsolved case involving missing young women in which investigators have looked at Durst as a possible suspect. But the only victims he's been conclusively tied to are his wife, Kathleen Durst, Susan Berman, and Morris Black. Now, I don't think you'll find a single person who doesn't believe that Durst is guilty as hell in the disappearance of his wife and the murder of Susan Berman. And we know for sure he killed Morris Black, though most rational thinking people don't believe for a second that it was self-defense. We know Robert Durst is a murderer, but is he the kind of guy who would kill people at random? At the time Kathleen disappeared, her marriage to Robert was falling apart and they were probably on the verge of a divorce, which likely motivated him to kill her. It's believed that Susan Berman helped fabricate an alibi for Robert at the time, but when the investigation into Kathleen's disappearance was reopened in 2000, and it became apparent that Berman was going to be questioned by police, Durst decided he had to murder his friend because she knew too much. And while the exact circumstances surrounding Morris Black's death are murky, it happened when Durst was hiding out in Galveston under a false identity. So it's possible Durst decided to kill Black after Black discovered who he really was. So we have three likely murders attributed to Durst, but one of them was his wife, and it seems like Durst killed the other two victims for the purpose of covering his ass and protecting himself. As far as anyone knows, Durst has never killed a victim at random, and the disappearance of Lynn Schulze took place a full 10 years before his wife went missing. While it would be tempting to believe Durst was a predator who decided to target a young female college student, that doesn't seem to be his M.O. Of course, if it turned out Durst was having a secret affair with Lynn, and he decided to get rid of her before anyone found out, then yes, he would have a motive to murder her. But no one has ever found any evidence to suggest that Robert Durst and Lynn Schulze actually knew each other. Until that happens, I'm inclined to believe that her appearance outside the All Good Things health food store is nothing more than a coincidence, and that Durst had nothing to do with her disappearance. I think that either Lynn was abducted and murdered by someone else while she was returning to her dorm room before her exam, or she did decide to skip the exam and was planning to meet someone at that bus stop, but this person did her harm. I have no idea who the real perpetrator could have been, but even if the Robert Durst connection is nothing more than a giant red herring, I'm still glad it happened, because it got Lynn Schulze's case into the spotlight again for the first time in decades. Hopefully, that will increase the chances of closure. So that brings us to the end of this mini-sode. Should you have any information about the unsolved disappearance of Lynn Schulze, or any possible connection she might have had to Robert Durst, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own theory about what happened, I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Also be sure to check out The Trail Went Cold on Facebook and Twitter, We're now available for download on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music, so be sure to leave us a rating or a review at any of those places, because that will help garner us more exposure and bring in some potential new listeners. We also have a donate button on our website, so if you're feeling generous and want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we'd be extremely grateful, and we'll be sure to give you a shout-out on a future episode. I want to thank all my loyal listeners and supporters out there, especially those from the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. A big thank you to McGill Foote, who does a great job of editing and assembling this podcast together for me, and he also happens to be the managing editor of The Back Row, the website which hosts this very podcast. And of course, a big shout out to Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. You can also check out my true crime and mystery articles at crack.com and listverse.com, and there's plenty of other non-true crime content you can find right here at The Back Row. So join me next week as I return with another brand new full-length episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶